From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Raise your hand if you are ready for the return of the Disc Golf Pro Tour this weekend. I'm raising my hand. Sarah's raising her hand. I hope the listeners are raising their hands. This is PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. That's Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, I'm stoked. We've got proper pro disc golf coming back this weekend. Are you excited for the Dynamic Disc Open?
I am. I think I'm most excited because I've played the country club before. I know how it can bear its teeth, especially on a few of the later holes in the course. And I know they've made some tweaks, and I'm really excited to see how people come off of off-season 2.0.
Same here. Speaking of coming off of off-season 2.0, we're going to be joined by five-time world champion Paul McBeth very shortly to talk about what he kind of got up to during off-season 2.0 and how he's feeling heading into this tournament and kind of, you know, his expectations for the rest of the year. And then obviously after the break, we will we'll preview the event, talk picks, talk media, all that good stuff. Before we get into our interview with Paul, I do want to remind people the PDGA Board of Directors elections begin next week, right around this time. You'll be getting an email from a company called IntelliScan. If you're a PDGA member, they will send you your ballot. So please keep an eye out for that and make sure you vote. And if you want to be a good informed citizen, keep your eye out on your podcast feed, because likely tomorrow or shortly after you listen to this podcast, I will be dropping the three sets of PDGA Board of Directors candidate interviews. Give you something to listen to over the weekend. Maybe throw it on in your ears while you watch the Dynamic Disc Open.
Not a bad idea.
No offense to the commentators, but multitasking, it's important to be efficient. So
yes.
That will be coming out soon. And then there will also be, along with those elections, you're going to have state and provincial coordinators in half of the states and provinces this year. So keep an eye out. You'll get that catered to you specifically. So like if you're in Southern California, like myself, our state coordinator is up for election, I will get an opportunity to vote on just that one. I'm not going to have to sort through all of them. So keep your eye out. That starts next week. We'll talk about it more on the show before we get into that. So yeah, Sarah, before we get into our interview with Paul McBeth, I think people thought maybe we were joking, but it's time for our weekly Chris Dickerson segment.
Yeah,
do you recall that we're doing this? This
we're
is
totally
thing.
Doing this.
We're doing the weekly Chris Dickerson segment. Chris Dickerson actually for once took a weekend off, but he is playing the Dynamic Disc Open, and it looks like he's in kind of a new video, Sarah. You brought this one to my attention. What's up with this video Chris Dickerson's in?
Yeah, so Prodigy released a pretty funny video they did. It was disc golf stereotypes, and it's all the usual suspects that we run into on the disc golf course, like the guy that thinks he's going to ace always, the guy who's always, this was actually Chris playing this role, like the one more disc guy, like he has one bad shot and he's like, one more.
Yeah.
One more. Can I, just one more. And then just, you know, ends up throwing his entire bag while four other people are there waiting for him. Will Schustrick was also
way too hyped guy.
Yeah.
He was late guy, always late guy, way too hyped guy, and what else? I didn't get through the whole video yet.
There were a bunch of them. I would not be able to remember all of them. There's a few other people in the video as well, but they all nailed it. And I think
there was PDGA rules guy, guy down on the ground
like,
calling
football.
on Chris Dickerson, which is perfect.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah,
so it was just really neat to see Chris Dickerson kind of in a different role. And, like, he is a funny guy, and if you know him, he does like to...
He's dry, right?
Yeah, he's dry, but and kind of quiet until you get to know him. So it was cool for the people to be able to see that side of Chris Dickerson, I think.
Nice. Well, this is that completes this week's Chris Dickerson Robot Chicken Limestone Cowboy segment here on PDGA Radio, presented by us.
Yes.
Presented by us. Sarah, just so we're clear, you can watch the video over on the Prodigy Disc YouTube channel. And me personally, I'm looking for Chris Dickerson to show out this week. We'll get to that in our picks after the break. So let's do this. Let's just get right into it. We don't usually do the interview this early, but we don't also usually have the five-time world champion and best player in disc golf on the show. So let's just go straight to the interview with Paul McBeth. And when we come back, we'll talk Dynamic Disc Open. So we'll be back in just a moment with Paul McBeth here on PDGA Radio. All right, the season is restarting, and that means we need to talk to the top professional player in the sport. You know him, you love him. It is five-time world champion Paul McBeth. Paul, how's it going, man? What's the vibe like right now, getting the season back up and running?
It's going well. I got to Emporia, Kansas here on Tuesday, and it's actually a pretty weird vibe here. I've seen some pros out there, no fans yet, but yeah, it's just like nobody's shaking hands. We, you know, there might be a few fist bumps here and there, but yeah, it seems like a lot of small groups, which is nice. I think that's how it should be. It keeps all the big groups away from the slowing down the practice rounds.
I mean, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but like in terms of how it affects the event, but I'm just curious, like, I don't know, are you like an affectionate dude when you haven't seen someone in a while? Like, do you want to go up and hug people, or are you okay with, you know, just the distant contact?
In the middle. I'd say I'm in the middle. Obviously shake hands, do all that stuff, but I'm not going to go over and hug someone 15 seconds long. But it's good. It is good to see a lot of familiar faces out, because everyone's, I think during this COVID time, people haven't really just kept in touch too the same. You know, everyone's just gone into their own area and done their thing, because even where you are, you can't really practice with a lot of people that you'd be around. So I think it's good to see a lot of familiar faces.
I was gonna say, man, what did you get up to during a lot of the downtime? I mean, you know, obviously you've got the home course going on, you're posting some stuff on social media, but what would you say you were doing, you know, to keep yourself busy most of this time?
Yeah, I was extremely busy during the break. You know, one with the course, honestly, I haven't seen the course in about a month or two. Hannah's dad's always putting in all the work, but just been too busy to actually get out there. So I'm hearing it's looking really nice and all that. So I'm looking forward to when I have a moment to get out there. But mainly my time's been in foundation disc golf lately, probably the last month and a half, like strong into that, but also just doing a lot of projects at home, course designing, designed a course in Venhorse down in Bedford, Virginia, which opened up, I think, last Friday. So that one's publicly open now for everyone to play. We have a quote-unquote Paul's Tees is what it is on UDisc, I think. But it's basically just like a pro layout, tournament layout. And then working on two other course designs right now, one from scratch and redesigning another one. So, and then mine on top of that. So been extremely busy during this this break in the disc golf season. And it's been like my first break, honestly, since I was like 16. 17, so it's been a long time since I've seen a summer without disc golf.
Yeah, man. You know, obviously your career, I mean, you have so much time left in your career, but you're kind of already starting to do some of the stuff that some of the guys who aren't touring as much or anymore do with course design. Is this is this something you're trying to set yourself up for down the road when, you know, the playing days are behind you?
Definitely. I think that's a good plan to have. I think it's something that would be nice to have in my back pocket by the time I'm ready to get to that point. Like right now it's just local. Started with my course. The thing with my course is I have to do all the works, you know, or at least Hannah's dad, and I have to fund it. So that kind of stinks. But with these other ones, I'm not doing any of the work. I'm not really putting the money behind it. So it's a lot easier. It gets done faster, because they have their deadlines, they have their workers. So it's like, all right, I think this is what this should do, this is what this should look like, and they're like, all right, done. So it's way easier designing someone else's course than my own.
Sure. Do you have like an element that you try and keep in your designs so far? Like, do you have kind of like a, you know, like for like, you know, UC has his signature kind of like island holes that he likes and things like that. Do you have a signature element you're putting in these designs?
Honestly, with these first three, I don't think yet, because mine is my property is very like up and down hills. There's these two creeks that run throughout the property, like pretty small. I mean, you could jump across them, but like it's water that separates fairways and stuff like that. So that's kind of what my course is like. The Venhorse one is a little different, where it's got two big ponds on it. It's got some wooded holes, some open holes, and then some like really tight holes. And then this third one is like huge, like 10,000, 11,000 feet. It's flat, and it's very rare. Yeah, very rare to find flat land in Virginia, especially our area. So it's flat, but in the woods, very European-like, to be honest. That's what it reminds me of, is kind of like a Chaleftia-style feel, like the wide fairways, but you still have to hit a line. So it's very – I'm excited for this one. This one will be a little bit longer because we just finished up the other course, but it's the same county. So this one will be a little bit longer, but I think it's going to take a lot less work to get it going. But I'm really excited about this one. It's going to be a – it's going to be a tour caliber style course.
Very nice.
Going to make mine look small. So.
Now, you know, you mentioned you haven't had this much downtime in a while. I know, you know, over the off season, you were debating what to do with your ankle. You were going to play earlier in the year and then maybe take it off later. How is all of this? First of all, what's, I guess, the ankle status update? And has any of that, you know, changed in terms of those plans?
Well, it's an interesting point because I wanted to get it looked at. I actually wasn't going to play until D-Glow. I was going to kind of rest on tournaments, but as you know, I'm out here now at the DDO is what I'm calling it. It's what Brody started calling it, the DDO. So I was like, why not? You know, that's yep. what it should be. We got the GBO, now we got the DDO. So I'm here, and you know why. I was planning on waiting until D-Glow, but my doctor's still closed. I mean, she has a family.
Oh, wow.
She hasn't gone. Yeah, the one that I've been seeing. So she hasn't gone back to work yet, which I don't blame her. She's got family and stuff like that. But I could go, but I'd have to like start all over and things like that. So they're really just kind of saving it for the people that really need to go to the doctors, you know?
Right.
So I don't really need to. I know it's an injury, but she said it's not really going to get worse, so I'm not too worried. I'm just going to have to deal with being sore here and there. But I've been playing – I've played a couple rounds without my brace, but I've been pretty sore the next day. And when I do play with the brace, I don't really get sore, but it's a little restricting, but I'm getting used to it. I mean, I'm definitely getting used to playing in it. So this offseason, if I continue to play, I'll be in the brace the whole time. But then the offseason, I'll definitely go hard in strengthening it and recovering. But I do want to get it looked at again as soon as I can, as soon as things start to open up a little bit more.
So now are you planning on a relatively full schedule? I know right now, at least what I've seen, you've got obviously here, Preserve.
Not playing Preserve.
Oh, you're not. I'm sorry. I must have looked at the wrong one.
Just to answer that, I only have 10 tournaments.
Okay.
Yeah, counting this one.
Okay. I mean, that's still 10 tournaments in – what, 4 months, 3.5 months?
Yeah, so it's like play this one, then I fly home, play D-Glow, then I fly home, and then it's like basically till the end of the year. So like 10 straight weeks on the road. So okay.
What's your comfort level and everything right now with traveling? I mean, I personally haven't like ventured to an airport or anything like that. Like, what was it like, and you know, how did you feel through the whole process?
Well, luckily, I mean, I've traveled to Europe before, and it's always like nobody's really talking, nobody's really interacting. You're going to the airport to travel, you're with your little group. So that's kind of what it feels like here in the U.S. now. Like, nobody's really interacting with other people they don't know. You know, everyone's wearing masks, at least on the planes. But yeah, I mean, I think everyone has that they know, like, all right, I shouldn't be standing on top of this person in line and things like that. So everyone's giving their distance and stuff like that. There are those few outliners still that don't know how to, you know, respect a little cushion, but it hasn't been too bad. You know, I'm obviously being a little bit more cautious, wearing my mask, washing my hands all the time, going, doing all that stuff. So, traveling's been, I mean, it's a lot easier right now than it ever has been. The only restriction is you have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
So, okay. But yeah, I mean, I'm flying to this one, flying to D-Glow, and then Hannah and I will be in the RV. So then we'll have our own space.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's talk this week. You're at the DD Open. It's, you know, essentially more or less a title defense for you. You know, you won GBO last year. You know, how do you feel coming into this event, and what kind of updates have they really made to the country club? Are we going to be seeing much different?
Honestly, I haven't felt too good leading up to it in the sense of where my game was at. But it's really, I think, turned around in the last 3 to 4 days. I went down to Texas for a few days to play with, trying to do some videos. Well, I should honestly say it was when I was in Virginia, it was thunderstorming for like a week straight. So it was some nasty weather, the worst I've seen it in a long time. So I didn't get much practice in, and then went to Texas and got some more thunderstorms. And then finally got a play, and it like just all clicked. Like all the work I was doing during that break, I was like, it's just not working. It's just not working. This sucks. But just kind of like, I was like, this is how you got to train. This is how you got to do it. It's going to click. Just wait. It's going to click. And then yesterday, finally, it was just like, all right, this is how you play disc golf. All right, I'm getting it. And then showed up here to Emporia Country Club and was just throwing the disc so well, putting really well. So, I mean, I'm feeling extremely confident after yesterday and today, and just going to keep riding that momentum into the practice rounds and continue doing what I'm doing, not change anything, just keep getting in the reps. But the course looks great. I saw Emac. He was leaving the property and he was in his truck and we chatted a bit and he was just talking about how he wishes they could run the tournament this time every year because one, the weather, and two, the course is just like, it's ready. You know, it's green. It's the grass is the right length and everything's not, you know, still dead from the winter. Right. So, but it's looking good. And as far as changes, I think they were all positive changes. I don't think there's anything where I'm like, why'd they do this? But my one knock is I don't like their tee pads. They're way too skinny. They need wider tee pads.
Okay. What's your take on the backstop on the island on 16?
I think it's going to make people run at the basket more, but it's going to make the putt a lot more challenging. So I think we're going to see a lot more runs at the basket now, which is the whole reason for that hole, is they didn't want people laying up to the right like they have been. They want people to attack that island. So this is going to force people to attack the island more, but the putt is going to be the challenging part.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're not going to run the putt, then why go for the island?
Yeah, right, so exactly.
So I feel like the only people that will really be taking advantage of that are the ones that either have extreme confidence in their putt or they're just like, I need something to turn around right here with the final two holes. So,
okay.
But yeah, I think it was a good change.
Now, if you're, you know, you're the highest rated player in the world and you are, it sounds like, feeling some rust, you know, what do you expect to see out of everybody else this week? Do you think it's going to be a little sloppy?
It's hard to say. I mean, it was, I don't know. I don't expect to see any rust. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, like, I mean, because people come out swinging at the beginning of the year after the long off season. So I don't expect to see anything different. I expect it to just continue elevating, to be honest. You know, when people have their winter, their off season, they come back better than ever at the start of the season. The only people that really have that rust are the people from the north, you know, who have the snow and stuff like that. And now they don't have any snow to deal with. So who knows? Maybe they're coming in better than they were, you know.
Sure.
Normally when they come off a long break.
So. Do you know of anyone in particular, like who you've, whether you've played with already or just in keeping with touch with them, who you know really like, took advantage of the extra time off and you expect them to maybe come out and shoot a little hotter than people would expect?
I wish Adam Hammes was here. I mean, I've been watching his videos and studying up on his putt a lot. He's been posting a lot of videos about his putt and I've been watching it and studying it and taking a lot from it to try to make my putt better. And he won't be here. So he's one that I would have said for, you know, the DD Open this week. But no, I don't know. I've seen a lot of people putting out YouTube videos and stuff like that, but I don't think those people are going to come out and just tear it up because they've been videoing a lot of their rounds. Because when I was playing my best, most of it was away from the camera. So, you know, at least the practice side. So it's hard to say. It's probably going to be someone that we didn't see practicing at all that's going to come out
sure
and be playing their best.
You told me you're traveling with Brody Smith, who is also correct playing the tournament. You know,
correct,
what have you seen out of his game just in this short period of time? I mean, you've probably had a more close-up view than anybody else to his progress.
Mm-hmm. He's progressing fast. He had the distance at the beginning, but at Waco, we saw he was messing up a lot of his upshots, especially the forehand, which a lot of people expected that to be his best shot, because coming from Ultimate, they're like, oh, he could throw a frisbee, he should be able to throw a disc easily. But it's so different. He's progressing really fast. I think if the season was still going, I think he'd be 1,000 rated by the end of the year, and I still think that's a very good possibility. But it's just seeing, you know, what tournaments he can make, how comfortable he can get in tournaments, because he's only played one real tournament in his life. So I expect him to continue to play well. I think he's one that's probably going to have to knock off, you know, quote unquote rust, because he's still learning the tournament. The disc golf tournaments, he's got the golf experience, so the nerves aren't going to be the issue, but
yeah,
just pace of play and how to play in a foursome rather than golf is three or two. So definitely going to take a little learning curve on the tournament play aspect than the nerve side. He's going to be clutch in that spot.
Whose ball golf game is better right now, yours or his?
Oh, his by far. It's not close.
Hey, I saw you've been playing a little bit.
Yeah, but he's on that other level.
Sure. You know, one thing I've been thinking about just in terms of for you as a tournament player, especially you as someone who is so used to having a crowd. I mean, you'll be on the 20th card occasionally, very rarely, and you'll still have 50 people following you. You know, what's it going to be like out there without spectators? Is that something that you've really given much thought to this week?
I haven't given it much thought, but I have had a thought about it. It's not going to be any different than filming all these foundation videos, filming all these videos with Brody. It's just us and a camera. Okay. So it's not going to be any different than what we've been doing. So as much as we've been filming for this, you know, our YouTube channels, it's been preparation to get ready for the tour to start with nobody there besides you, the group, and the couple cameras.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Will you be able to tap into that same kind of tournament mindset? Is it just going to be you're just straight competition as opposed to, because I know you get juiced by the crowd, right? Everybody does.
I don't see the crowd. I don't hear the crowd.
That's how you're able to stare down those putts and make them at the big moments, right?
Yeah, I hear them after the fact. I don't hear them before. I don't see them before, but after it's been made, that's when I'm like, oh, okay, there they are. Or if I'm already feel like I have a tournament won, I'll start to notice them, and it's a positive. You know, it's not like this crowd's making me nervous. It's a wow. I can let off the gas a little bit and just enjoy this moment.
Okay. Now, you know, you grew up playing other sports and everything, and obviously mm-hmm. other pro sports are not really able to do much right now. You know, is this one of those situations where you think disc golf can hopefully maybe fill a niche for people and, you know, maybe we can take advantage a little bit of these other sports being down for a minute?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I brought up Foundation Disc Golf a lot, which I owned Foundation Disc Golf last year, and now being a part of it this year, just with the COVID season, like this COVID, you know, epidemic, I guess, or pandemic, I meant, this pandemic, disc golf has really taken off in right. just sheer order of discs. And it kind of is a letdown that the factories have gotten shut down, because it's really slowed down the manufacturing side. But as far as retail, it's skyrocketed for some, because especially online businesses, because people are trying to find outdoor activities that they can do with their family, by themselves, like with the few people they're quarantined with, because they have to get outside and exercise in some way. You know, people are struggling being inside this long. So whether it was running, whether it was walking, whether it was surfing, I think that was one of the few things.
Yeah.
Disc golf was allowed to happen in a lot of places and actually encouraged in some. So I think it was very beneficial for the sport of disc golf. And the growth of disc golf in this time, and who knows where the CBS thing's going to go, but you know, it, it, it's a sad time, but it was a really positive time for disc golf.
Do you think that the Pro Tour is going to be able to have a full rest of the season uninterrupted?
I think so. I think it should get uninterrupted. I think the ones that might be a little in trouble would be like, Minnesota seems pretty open, but the Preserve and then D-Glow might be. But I think by the time it gets up northeast where it's a little bit stricter, it should be loosened by that time. And I think as far as the competitive side, there won't be many issues. I think it's only going to be spectator side that's going to be the one that won't get opened up if things don't turn in the positive way by that time.
Do you notice, does it seem like most of the players are okay with some of the restrictions? Obviously, you know, I know there's the Pro Tour is asking people to limit their number of travelers together and stuff like that. Are you getting the sense that people are okay kind of making the sacrifice just to get out there and be doing it again?
Brody and I have kind of been joking around that, you know, we like got to count how many people we hang out with, cause we got to keep our pod really small. You know, we got to keep it under six. So each time we play with someone, we're like, all right, we can only play with one more new person now. So we've kind of been half joking, half serious about it. Joking in the sense of like, we say it out loud, but serious in the sense of like, all right, we're really going to try to keep it to this number. So I don't think people really mind, but I'm not traveling that hard right now.
Sure.
And my circle is pretty small anyways. You know, I obviously get along with a lot of the players on tour, but after the tournament, we all kind of go different directions. My circle is pretty small, and I think it'll be that way for the end of the year, especially this year. I'm not sure where people are going to go after this one, if they're going to continue playing until, you know, the Preserve and then Deagle after that, or if they're going to go somewhere and just hang out for a couple of weeks and then do that last part of the tour. It's kind of still open for the next month and a half. So, I think it'll be interesting, but I'll be back and forth at home. So I won't be a part of those traveling pods.
Sure, sure.
And then once I am on the road, I'll be in the RV. So it'll be a small group anyways. So it shouldn't really change things for me.
Are you just like jonesing for an escape room right now? Like, I know that's one of your main things when you're on tour.
No, not really jonesing for it. I was actually, I forget. There's something funny about escape rooms, but no, not jonesing for that. It's nice to be out. I'm jonesing to play like 2 to 3 rounds a day and throw a lot of shots and hopefully not lose any discs. So that's good to get out on a course where it's like, oh, I know this course. I know I need to play well this weekend. It just kind of, it's different. It's a different mindset compared to like playing at home. You just kind of, the feeling's different. You know, your mentality's different when you're coming out to a pro tour and playing one of these courses, because now these courses are designed to challenge you. You know, they're designed to beat you up and not let you score on them, to where when you're playing your local course, it's more of a fun challenge. This is like, no, we want you to suffer on these courses and make them hard.
Yeah, you got to get your game face on again.
Yeah, so it's a different mindset for sure.
All right, I got one more question for you, and this is just kind of a random one that I've been thinking of lately. You know, with the whole pandemic and kind of being cooped up inside, like a lot of people are you know, like I've been playing video games. Like I've actually been playing like pinball and like older video games, like stuff I was playing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. You were a kid once. What was your like go-to video game of choice when you were a kid?
I think I only had really two video game phases. I think when I was maybe preteen and then maybe high school. When I was young, it was like Spyro. I think that was the one I really liked, and I think that
I don't
was
think I know that one,
the dragon one, Spyro.
Oh, okay,
and then the next one. Well, Spyro and Crash Bandicoot. Those two went side to side.
Okay.
And then later, I think it was like Ratchet and Clank. I like those adventure ones that were kind of fun. But obviously, the sports ones are always good. But you can never just get into a franchise and just be like game after game after game after game. I feel like I have to learn something, do missions and stuff like that. But yeah, Madden was always cool too.
There we go. All right, man. These are the real hard-hitting questions that I have to ask, you know. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Paul, I appreciate it, man. I know it's late on your side of the world, so I appreciate you taking some time, and good luck this week. I know everyone is just going to be stoked to see you back out on the course.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
No worries, man. All right. That was Paul McBeth, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. All right, it is time for the Birdie Fuel Coffee Hot Rounds. Thanks again to Paul McBeth for joining us. Sarah, what do you got on the FPO side for Hot Rounds? Were they like, now we're getting into summertime, and if we're talking about coffee, are these rounds still hot? Like, are they like it's kind of cold out in the morning and you really want a hot coffee? Or are we starting to cool off and get into like, you know, cold brew rounds?
No, this set of hot rounds is actually pretty steamy.
Like gonna burn your mouth on it if you don't put in some half and half sort
not,
of hot?
Not the hottest rounds slash.
So like after you put in after you put in a half and half.
After you put in the, or if you're me, almond coconut milk combo.
Womp womp.
Nut pod.
That's fine. I've had it.
No, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. All right, let's hear the FPO hot rounds. What do we got?
Okay, so this past weekend was the challenge at Goat Hill Park presented by Innova, and that was in Oceanside, California. And we did picks on this last week, and I got to watch some of the footage from Central Coast Disc Golf. It was pretty exciting.
I know, time out real quick. I apologize because I did get so excited about the Disc Golf Pro Tour coming back that I neglected to mention that I actually went out to Goat Hill.
Yes.
Props to Alan Risley for running that event out there. Did a really good job keeping to, you know, our local guidelines and stuff for people having to wear masks in common areas and stuff like that. And man, a little bit of a comeback win. Did you watch all the videos?
It's not
a spoiler anymore.
No, it's not a spoiler. I watched the entire first round and then half of the last round. So at that point, after nine holes, I believe Thomas Gilbert still had Anthony Barella by three strokes.
He was up three and Anthony came back, man.
Yeah. And it was interesting because Anthony looked a little bit shaky on the putting group. We've kind of seen this from him. He's either like super on or super off. And the first couple holes of the final round, he was looking a little bit shaky. And I will have to watch the last nine holes. Obviously I know who wins, but I want to see how he does it. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, Thomas admittedly made a couple mistakes. But man, watching those two throw, they're both 20 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And they are just obliterating the Frisbee.
They were throwing
casual 600 feet.
Yeah. So Central Coast graphics are amazing. They just keep getting better and better. And they had the distance, actual, not internet distance, and the miles per hour. And those two were consistently throwing 70 to 70, 75 miles per hour.
Yeah, so I saw one in person. Yeah, I saw one in person. I think it was Anthony threw 78.
You would die. If you got hit by that disc, you would die. I
mean, at close range.
At close range, yes. I mean,
don't stand in front of the disc.
No. Oh my gosh. That was incredible.
But I mean, anyway, those two are, I think we forget sometimes like that a lot of these disc golfers are still so young and we could be seeing like pretty amazing things from the people. We get, you know, we talk to Paul and Paul is still obviously in his prime. He's what, 29, I think.
Something like that.
You know, has plenty of more years, but like you've got, you know, Eagle, I think is maybe 22 now. You've got Drew Gibson, Thomas Gilbert, Anthony Barella, all these young kids who just throw so stinking far and they can't even go drink a beer to celebrate it afterwards, legally at least. So
they can drink Birdie Fuel coffee though.
They can drink Birdie Fuel coffee. Let's get back to the hot rounds.
Bringing it all back together, trying to keep you on track here.
Good job. Good segue.
So on the women's side, we could just talk about our picks because we only chose winners. I chose Jennifer Allen to win because last year she crushed it. And it seemed like even during offseason 2.0, she was still playing, practicing, keeping up on her game. So I had all the faith in the world that she was going to bring it home. She ended up in the fifth place spot on our hot rounds list with a 948 her second round to take second place to Owen Scoggins, who also shot that 948 the second round. And they were only two strokes apart. So it was a Yep, two strokes apart. Own shot, 10 down overall, and Jennifer Allen, 8 down overall. And that was quite the battle.
Yeah, Own held that two shots. I think she took that after the first round and held it into the second and third. I do have a little bit of insight. I actually talked to Jennifer Allen. And before she got to go, first of all, she had a good friend pass away. So I know that was on her mind. And then when she got to Goat Hill or was on the way, she found out that she was not going to be able to participate in the Dynamic Disc Open, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes. And so I think it all kind of messed with her mental game a little bit, honestly. And she'd tell you that. She told me that as much. So, you know, some distractions there.
Yeah, for her that'll happen
on the weekend. But that's not to take away from Owen's performance. You know, she's really strong on the approach, keeping up with Jennifer's like massive distance off the tee. So great performance.
And I just saw, so up until I guess this past weekend, Owen was on the Innova crew team, and I saw that she just got promoted to team champion after this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. So congrats to her. That's an awesome win to start the second half of the year with. The third hottest rated round came from Eden, New York at the Solstice-a-thon, and that was Kaylee Hanania. Okay. And she shot a 951 her third round to take third place. I believe she's new on our hot rounds list. So congratulations to Kaylee.
Yeah. Very nice.
And the, got my numbers wrong. Now the third hottest rated round is from Katie Tati in Estonia, and she shot a 953 her first round to take second place at the EDGL Kari Kasari.
Holstrapalli number one pro.
Yes, there you go.
I'll take it.
You're way better.
Sorry, I'm just finishing your sentences for
you. I know, thank you. And then the second hottest rated round, I was super psyched to see this name on the list. We haven't seen much from her lately, or from anyone really, but we didn't really see her name on the list a whole lot last year. So Sayananda played in the Fort Steilacoom Open. Did I pronounce that correctly?
I think they say Steilacoom.
Steilacoom. Okay.
I don't think it's pronounced as it sounds, but if any listeners out there want to correct me, please do.
Please do. Yeah. And that was in Lakewood, Washington. She shot a 961 her second round to take first place at that event. And then the hottest rated round of the weekend was from Macy Walker. And I've played with her before. She's from Eastern Tennessee, and she played in the Appalachian Ironman in Maryville. Looks like Maryville, but here in Tennessee, we say Maryville.
Maryville.
Yep. And she shot a 963 her first round to take first place. And I believe she won. Oh, hopefully my computer goes quickly. She won by 23 strokes.
Dang.
Oh, that's amazing.
Very nice.
Congratulations, Macy.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. Over on the MPO side, we're going to start out the Colwich Cowskin Creek Classic in Colwich, Kansas. And Chris Smith shot a 1047 rated first round. It may have been the only round of that tournament. But anyway, Chris Smith won that one. Nicely done, Chris. Out at Goat Hill, we had Clint Calvin, local guy, who also smashes the disc, shooting a 1049 rated 14 under par second round, moving him up into third place, got him qualified for USDGC, and got him tied for our fourth hottest rated round. Nicely done, Clint Calvin. Good dude. I've spent some time talking to him at various airports over the years, because when we're going to these big tournaments and we're coming back to San Diego, him and I always end up at the airport together. So he's a nice dude. I'm happy to see him performing well. Grant Britton also shot a 1049 rated round at the Eagles Wings Disc Golf Flex Start at Cliff Stevens in Clearwater, Florida. So we had two 1049s there. Our third hottest rated round was Chandler Fry out at the Fort Steilacoom Open. It was a 1053 rated second round. He ended up winning that event. Nicely done, Chandler. Andrew Marweed, again, wasn't he on the list last week? I think he was. Yeah. Andrew Marweed shot a 1058 at the No Foolin' on the Summer Solstice presented by Discraft, as did Tim Barham. They both shot 1058s in their second round. This was up in Dexter, Michigan, and Andrew came in second, Tim came in first. And our final hot round of the weekend, dude, it's Scott Withers again. Race for the Cup, 1 plus 2 equals 3, up in Albany, Oregon, 1068.
first place, because that's all that Scott Withers does is just own the Pacific Northwest. I actually think that the like Oregon flag just has a picture of Scott Withers.
He's rated 1037. So yeah, no joke.
He's like the East Coast version, or he's like the West Coast version of Andrew Fish on the East Coast.
Oh, yes, yeah.
They're those two dudes who are super high rated and always show out at tournaments, but just don't travel to the big ones as much.
Right.
It's the Withers and Fish combo. I would like to see them both on a feature card sometime. Let's make that happen.
Make it happen. You can do it.
I don't have any events to do it at this year.
Next year.
I know. We would have been up at Beaver State this weekend, like my favorite tournament of the year.
Yeah.
I love Portland. We missed Worlds last week. Gosh, so sad. But yeah, that's okay. Let's keep it positive. Let's talk about the Dynamit Disc Open. That is coming up this weekend. But before we do that, I do have to remember to say, go to birdiefuelcoffee.com. Use PDGA Radio as your code at checkout. You get 10% off. Support your favorite disc golfers. Support this show. Get some coffee. You'll be good to go. Thank you to Birdie Fuel Coffee, as always, for supporting the show. Now for the Dynamit Disc Open. This weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Emporia Country Club. This is like GBO light, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a 3-round GBO instead of a 4-round GBO. And no spectators, unfortunately, because of
that's gonna be so weird.
Restrictions. I mean, there's going to be, I think, volunteers and other players and stuff can hang out and spectate, yeah, but for the most part, no spectators. But that's the world we're living in right now. And then, so as we alluded to with Jennifer Allen, there are some travel restrictions in Kansas right now. They have restricted, or I shouldn't say they've restricted travel from four states. They've required people coming into Kansas from four states to quarantine for 14 days. And because of that, the tournament followed up with some of those players and, just refunded them their entry fee. And they will not be playing. The two most high profile of those names are Jennifer Allen and Chris Clemens. Dynamit Disc, like, highest rated player, yeah, which is such a bummer to see that. And I, he's such a good dude. Hate to see that happen, but, you know, he was in Arkansas. That was one of the states. It's Arkansas, Arizona, Alabama, and Maryland are the four states that Kansas has travel restrictions from. Wear a mask, folks, so we don't have to have travel restrictions anymore. Moving on back to the Dynamit Disc Open. I'm sorry we won't see a couple people there who we really do like to see. But there are going to be plenty of awesome players in store this week. There are 116 players signed up. There's going to be live coverage on the Disc Golf Network starting on Friday at 2 p.m. Central. That's noon in my time zone, Sarah. Is that 3 p.m. in your time zone? No, it's 2 p.m. You're in Central too. It's also 2 p.m. 3 p.m. East Coast. Y'all can figure out your own time zones. Sorry.
Y'all. Throw that y'all on there.
It's super Californian of me. So there's the feature card right now for the live coverage is going to be Eagle McMahon, Riku Isaki, Jeremy Colling, and Eric Oakley. And then I think there's a second card, which I think is being filmed by Central Coast, and probably I would imagine they might kick over to this on the live a little bit, but dude, this card is redonk. Simon Lazat, Nicola Castro, Paul McBeth, and Drew Gibson.
Oh, whew, my gosh.
Whew.
Yeah. And then
look at the third card is Philo Brathwaite, Kevin Jones, Emerson Keith, and Ray Pettigrew. Like, there's just some ballers. I'm so excited for Pro Disc Golf to come back. And then over on the FPO side, the feature card is Paige Pierce, Rebecca Cox, Paige Hsu, Katrina Allen. Dang. That one goes off at 4 p.m. Central Time and will be worked into the live coverage on Disc Golf Network. There may be some other post-production news coming that I've been told about, but that isn't fully ready to be released. So just keep your eyes out for that. It is exciting. It's good. You'll like it, I promise. But just know that if you do want to watch this tournament this weekend, it will be on the Disc Golf Network and probably your favorite post-produced spots too. But just keep an eye on it all at dgpt.com, pdj.com, udisclive.com, all that stuff. Not a heck of a lot else to really get into in too much depth, I think, on this tournament, Sarah, because we know the GBO. We know the Emporia Country Club. It's long. It's open. There's going to be some OB. They did put a nice backstop on the island hole number 16. So hopefully we see some more people running it. I will say I love dynamic discs. Love these guys to death. I was trolling through the disc golf social media today and I saw some people throwing out at the dynamic disc open. Did you see any of those? Do you happen to see like Paul McBeth or I think Emerson Keith was throwing, but it was on Luke Humphrey's Instagram. You didn't see any of these?
No.
Okay. So the thing that stuck out to me the most, and especially the first one of these I saw, it's Emerson Keith, who we know is a shorter dude. And he's playing the island hole and he goes and he throws and he gets up near dynamic disc has the, you know, we have all those A-frame signs now that everyone's putting at the tournaments, right? In front of the tee to like advertise. Cool. Great. I swear the sign was half the size of Emerson Keith. It's so big. The signs are so big, which I love that dynamic disc is doing that and dressing up the course. It was quite the picture.
Yeah.
Go over to Luke Humphrey's Instagram and look, and you can see, I feel bad as a shorter gentleman myself, like Emerson Keith. I think I may have a couple inches on him, but, the signs do go up to about his waist. It looks like maybe it's just perspective from the video, but they're large and in charge. It's the Emporia Country Club, and we kind of know what to expect. But Sarah, you kind of alluded to this at the top of the show. You know, what are you really looking for, especially on the FPO side at this tournament?
So I think this course is pretty well designed for the women. There are several courses I know that are played on tour that sometimes the women, trying to tread lightly here, sometimes the women complain, myself included, about there being what we call tweener holes. And that's like maybe a 550-foot or 500-foot par three where no woman, maybe except for Paige Pierce, is reaching that. And we're all just going to take three. So there's not a whole lot of score separation. This course, on the other hand, I feel like, so they've got 11 shorter tees for the women for the FPO field. And I think that just lends well to score separation. And we've talked about this before, even though it is on a golf course, there's a fair amount of elevation change. There is out of bounds. At least when I played there, there was wind every round. So it's not just your throw as hard as you possibly can kind of golf course. There are definitely trees. There's some very rough on the side of some of the holes that you do not want to contend with. And it's a lot of placement golf, honestly, for some of the longer holes. And then I always talk about too, I find it more difficult to, so say I've got a, 600 foot hole and I throw like 325 and then I've got an approach shot to the basket. Like if it's a wider open course or hole, it's harder for me to do that approach shot because wind comes into play. If you're like me, sometimes it's a little bit harder to judge the distance when there aren't a whole lot of trees or you're not in like a tree lined fairway and things like that. So,
right.
I think as far as disc golf courses go on ball golf courses, I think it is very well designed and fair for the women.
I agree. I think it's one of those tournaments and for the men too.
Yeah.
My thing that I will say until the end of time about the Emporia Country Club, because it is one of those tournaments that the GBO is huge and we love it. But if you read the fanosphere, on the disc golf internet, like a lot of people don't like the course. They think it's open and they think it's boring. And if you haven't been there in person, I would agree with you. I used to think the same thing. It's really one of those things where you kind of need to be on the ground to appreciate its various nuances of just elevation and shot shape and landing zones and stuff. So I would say if you are watching this tournament, just, give it a chance. Let's be stoked to have disc golf back, number one. And number two, this course actually is a lot better, I think, than it comes across sometimes on video. There's a lot more challenge to it. Now, Sarah, something I asked Paul, that I want to put to you. Do you think that there's going to be like an off-season rust situation, or do you think it's going to be like coming out guns blazing?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of excitement, obviously, And people may be, I don't know, people are like champing in the bit to actually play disc golf. And so they may be like just super excited and motivated and take more aggressive shots just because they're like, "Wee, I'm throwing discs. This is awesome. And I'm competing." But yeah, I think, I mean, it was really hard there for a little while to actually get practice in. I mean, if you didn't have acreage at your house or wherever you were staying, then really a lot of people were doing were just putting. So yeah. Hopefully we'll see maybe some better putting because people were limited to that. And because of all of the like pandemic putting challenges that were happening. So maybe that part of people's game will be a little bit more solid or confident. But yeah, I would actually expect there to be some rust for most people.
I agree. The one thing that Paul brought up that I thought was interesting that I hadn't really considered was that, you know, at the beginning of the season, starting in Vegas and in Arizona, you know, those people who come down from like the northern states, like your Wisconsin, Minnesota, anywhere in the Midwest, really, where it's still cold and snowy, are at kind of a disadvantage. And this time of year, they really shouldn't be. So I'm curious to see if we maybe get a slightly more competitive field from a couple of those, you know, the Michiganders or the Wisconsinites or the Minnesotans. I think I said all those right.
Yeah.
I think it's Minnesotans.
Okay.
Right. So that'll be interesting to see. So yeah, I don't know. It's it'll be fun. I think, you know, there's a few people who we know have been out playing. We know Kevin Jones showed out really well at the Majestic. You know, we just had some people. I do have some concern about the people who played at Goat Hill over the weekend and then had to haul tail out to Kansas. That's a quick turnaround and a long drive, but you know, they can do it. It's more of the people like, you know, what is it going to be like for, you know, Paul, or what's it going to be like for Drew Gibson or James Conrad? You know, I mean, there's a lot of questions, and I think it's going to be fun. I think it's I'm really excited to see how many people are truly in mid-season form. I am also curious to see how the lack of spectators impacts some people who really do thrive off of the crowd. So
the energy, yeah.
It's going to be fun. Lot in store for the weekend, and really just, man, let's watch disc golf. It's going to be fun. Did I mention the feature cards yet? Did I say who? Yeah, I said who was on the feature cards, right? I couldn't remember. Sorry, we had a little stop in the recording there, people. We had to reboot there.
Technical difficulties.
That was my bad. But yeah, so again, Disc Golf Network. And if you are a PDGA member and don't have a subscription yet, you can go and get a discount. Sarah, let's do some picks. I think I get to go first.
You do. And let's just go over what happened for our picks last week. So you picked Own and Philo to win. You got 2 points for Own. I picked Jennifer Allen and Thomas Gilbert to win. And I got big fat zeros. So that puts me at 5 still. And now you 2 more ahead of me at 14.
Boom.
Don't worry.
I will say this.
I'm coming back.
We didn't, sadly, clearly the listeners didn't get to the part of the show where we asked them to bring in the picks last week. It's fine. We love you still, people. We did get a couple of picks on Twitter, but we only got MPO side. So Sarah, I don't know. Do we want to give the listeners some credit for MPO picks and then, you know, give them a pass on FPO? How do we want to do this? Or do we just maybe
take points away from them not picking FPO?
Ouch. Well, I mean, look, I should have probably tweeted earlier to get them on board, so I can take some of the blame for it. But let's do this.
So we have to deduct 5 points from your score.
No, let's give the listeners an opportunity to pick the MPO side, and then they can have whoever does better on the FPO side, me or you, they can share.
Okay.
All right, deal. That sounds good. So our listener, this is going to come from Swag Disc Golfer at Swag Disc Golfer, not golfer, golfer, on Twitter. He says, Chris Dickerson to win and Kevin Jones for top 5.
Right.
I like it. I get to pick first, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to start on the FPO side because let's give the FPO some love. The field is solid. We don't have Sarah Hokum, though. I don't think she's generally a fan of the Emporia Country Club. And if that's the one you're starting your season out at, I can understand. That's hard. So, I mean, we've got Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Paige Shu, Holly Finley, Missy Gannon, Rebecca Cox. Those are our top six. You know, Paige Pierce is rated 14 points higher than the next closest player, so I have to go with Paige. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah.
I'm going to go...
Come on, you're going to take Kat. Stop it.
No, I'm not, actually. I'm going to go Paige Shu. I'm going Paige Shu. She's in her home turf. Who knows how much practice she's gotten out there ahead of everybody else.
Wow.
She's got all, we talked about this last year too. She's like on her home turf with all of her friends and family around.
Are you and Kat no longer BFFs?
Oh no.
Is that breaking news on the show here?
It is not breaking news. We actually were texting today.
Fine, Kat, top five. Thank you. Appreciate it.
She made it. She made it to Emporia yesterday and was not very happy because I guess Austin wanted to get out of the car and like right after their drive, I'm not sure how long it was, and immediately play a practice round, and she wasn't feeling it. And I was like, you and me both. I just want to relax after a long drive.
Yeah, anyway. I hear you. All right, well then, if you're taking Paige Shu for the win, I'll take Kat for top five. That's a lock. thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, and then, man, this one's a toss-up. If you hear me typing, it's because I'm putting the picks in. I'm not sure how loud that is on the microphone.
Typey.
Let's see. I'm gonna go Holly Finley. I'm feeling good about her. In the second half of we need to have a name for like the second half of 2020. 2020.2.
2020
V2 version 2. I don't know.
2020 V2. Yeah, we'll work on that one.
All right, I'm going Holly for.
You know what? I think that's a good pick. I think, you know, what she lacks off the tee, she will be able to make up for in approach and putting.
Yeah, she's like a what I would call a really mature player. Like, she doesn't get super emotional about her shots, good or bad. And she's a really good approach shotter, and she's like very conservative, and she's extremely intelligent about what like disc choice, and she knows her bag really well. So, yeah.
All right, I dig it. All right, MPO side winner. I mean, as much as he said in our interview that he was feeling a little rusty and things were finally starting to click, and there still is kind of the ankle, and you never know. I can't pick against Paul McBeth until he shows me otherwise. So, I got to take Paul McBeth to win. Like, I won't do this the whole season, people. My contrarian nature will kick in, and I will not just pick the top-rated player on both sides. But right now, top-rated player on both sides, please.
I'd already typed it in before you even started your whole spiel about it.
Perfect.
Man. So I guess I can't pick what the listeners picked. Okay.
The listeners overlap,
I forgot the rules. Well, I'm going Dickerson because...
Dude, I love it. I love it.
Because he's Dickerson and he sponsors the show now.
I don't think that's how it works, but no, that works for me. Well, no, that would not surprise me at all. And actually, I very heavily considered picking him because I feel like he might be one of those guys who... I don't feel like Chris Dickerson gets into an off season form, because I think he's always in season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't think that he's going to show rust. I think he'll be one of those guys who will come out and perform quite well.
Yeah. Like you were saying earlier about just different climates, different parts of the country, like Tennessee, it got a little bit cold here, but I mean, he's playing all year round. He doesn't have rust.
Yep. I agree. All right, top five, Eagle McMahon, please. Thank you.
No, not even a thought. No,
it's Eagle McMahon.
All right.
I'm
very confident about that.
He's won at the GBO before.
Yes.
And true. He plays very well there.
I'm going to go a person that's similar stature, Calvin Heimberg.
Ooh, all right. I like it.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, to me, it's hard to not want to pick multiple top five people. Like, I could easily see Kevin Jones and Emerson Keith going off this week.
Yeah.
It will not surprise me if we see a performance from Emerson Keith. He just strikes me as the kind of dude who will come out and
and play really well this weekend after a long time off. So
here's an interesting one. Paul Ulibarri is in the list. Does that mean he's like, he's back from his knee
surgery? He was playing, he was playing before, he played before the shutdown. He was at Waco.
I have no memory before the, you know, 2020
pre-COVID. That's fine. No, he, actually, what did I see? I saw a comment he put on a Facebook page that said the shutdown, he actually felt like the off-season 1.0 went better than off-season 2.0, and he's feeling a little rusty, but we'll see how it goes. I think it'll be fun to get an eye on all these guys, and hopefully we'll have some good footage from a pretty good cross-section of players. You know, one name that I'm noting is not on the list, surprisingly enough, is Nate Sexton. So hopefully he'll make it out for the preserve. I haven't looked at next week's list because it's too far in advance. We'll talk about that one next week. For this week, the Dynamic Disc Open, again, it starts on Friday. You can watch it all on the Disc Golf Network. That is discgolfnetwork.com. And if you go to that page and put in the code that Sarah's dogs just barked out, you can get a discount on your membership.
Sorry, that
or
was
on
John,
your subscription.
That was John Coltrane.
That was John Coltrane. That was, I thought you said that was Sean. Oh, man.
No, all right, Sean's probably yelling at him right now, but
that's cool. No, it's fine. Hey, man, people are going to hear some dogs on the Board of Directors interviews for sure.
Oh, good.
We got some doggies in the house as well. All right, Sarah, we are almost done with the show, but not before we do a quick segment of Run It or Lay Up. If you recall, people, it's very simple. If we like the statement, we run it. If we don't like the statement, we lay up. I will admit we were having a hard time coming up with a couple of these this week. I usually like to have like three or four. I've only got two at the moment. Did you come up with a third one during the show?
Yes.
Okay.
I can come up with anything food related.
Okay.
Because I love to eat.
Anything food related. Perfect. I love it. Yeah. So let's do the disc golf one.
Okay.
This is related to the Dynamic Disc Open. And obviously a high profile player who we did not talk about yet is Brody Smith. This is going to be his second big pro tournament. He is currently rated, I believe, 960. And so the statement related to Brody Smith is Brody Smith finishes in the top half of the 101 person open field. Sarah, are you running that or laying up?
I'm laying that one up.
Ooh.
Yeah. Sorry. Why? I mean, well, all right. If you're looking at the list, what did we say? There's 101
MPO.
He's about in the top or the lowest third. I didn't want to count all the way from the bottom, but yeah, man, like he's still a very new disc golfer. Like his rating is from what, four tournament rounds? And now he's got it. Like we listed all those things that come into play. He's now got to contend with wind and pressure and a wide open course for the most part and out of bounds. Like there's just a lot. There's a lot of things to think about on this type of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no offense to him. Like, no, he's a brand new player.
Hey, Sarah, hey, you're a pundit. I'm sorry. You have to stand by it. Honestly, I was thinking run it before you started talking, and I am not sure because I think the big factor with him is going to be the wind. I think he will be a little more comfortable than at Waco because this is on a golf course. We know he has experience in golf. He's a strong golfer, like ball golfer by all accounts. So I think that will be impactful in terms of his comfort level. The wind, I think, will be a factor, but dude lives in Texas. He knows about wind. You got to deal with wind in Old Dominion.
True.
I'm running it. I want Brody Smith, top half of the field. Run it. Let's go.
Can I, one other thing. So he just posted a video a few days ago and it's he and a friend, I think he's in Virginia actually. Just playing,
he's traveling
like,
with Paul right now.
Yeah.
So that's another feather in his cap for the run it. Run it.
So they were, it was just him and a friend. They were playing like a one-on-one round. And the other thing, I mean, you can kind of see this with all of his YouTube content. Like he's a very emotional dude. And I think when it comes to disc golf, that is going to play against him I don't think, especially as a new player, and this is like the maturity that I was talking about with Holly Finley, is, you know, 8 years into my career, I was like, oh man, I can't get too overexcited about if I just aced or field aced or whatever. Just, you know, likewise, I shouldn't get emotional about going out of bounds and letting it affect my next shot. And I don't think he's anywhere close to reaching that disc golf maturity yet. And I think the emotional side of him is going to affect his play as well.
Ooh, interesting. All right. Good. Yeah. Good talk. He's going to at you on Twitter, just like he did Jamie Thomas. It's going to be good stuff. You're going to get called out soon.
Hey, I'm not on Twitter, so he's going to find me some other way. I think
maybe he did. Maybe he did on Facebook. I don't remember. Okay. next go at runner layup. I will introduce this one, Sarah, because there's a little backstory to this. So I was checking my email yesterday, and I got an email from Ticketmaster, those fine people at Ticketmaster, and I say that dripping with disdain because they just take your stinking money and fees and stuff. Anyway, yep. Ticketmaster is not my favorite company. Anyway, they were sending out an email for a drive-in movie concert where Garth Brooks is going to be doing concerts that are at the drive-in, which
this
I think
is hilarious bad. Because
is this the story that you were going to mention that you told me about before the show?
Yes.
Are you going?
No. Continue your story.
Okay. Well, so anyway, so it got me thinking about how, about drive-in movie theaters. So here's the statement, run it or lay up. Drive-in movie theaters are better than regular movie theaters.
Am I going first? Can I get, all right. So here's my backstory. So my friend, Lisa, she's my running friend. She really likes country music. I do not. I've actually met Garth Brooks before 10 years ago.
That's so fancy.
Yeah. He worked for, I was working for Habitat for Humanity, and he did this like whole building thing and then did this small performance. And he's actually, I became a fan that night. He's hilarious. It's like half comedy, half music. Anyway, beside the point. So a friend of hers was like, oh, we were going to see Garth Brooks at this drive-in movie thing, but we can't go anymore. And it allows one car for six people. The tickets were not super expensive.
I tried to get in to see how much they were just out of curiosity, and everything was sold out. It never told me how much.
I don't remember how much she said it was. But anyway, so she's like, yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm going to do it. Blah, blah, blah. Then she gets the confirmation email from Ticketmaster, and in fine print, it says something like, Garth Brooks will not actually be in attendance. This is a performance that will be, put in all these drive-in movie theaters.
Oh, yeah, it's getting broadcast to movie theaters. Yeah. Did she think she was going to the drive-in movie theater to see an actual Garth Brooks concert?
She thought that he was doing a live, a tour of, performing in live. Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm laughing at her. I'm just like, man, she's like, well, we're still going. I know.
Yeah.
I know. She'll never hear this. She's,
oh my gosh.
She's smart. I think she just wanted to meet him and see him in person so badly that she was just like blinded by the potential opportunity.
That's amazing.
So anyway, I have only been to a drive-in theater once. I went to college at in the middle of nowhere in Western Pennsylvania. And there was a drive-in theater about an hour away. And it was, I think, just the sheer experience of like, this is what our parents used to do. I also don't love being around like a whole bunch of people, like stranger danger. And I just think it was a really cool opportunity, like stay in your car, which is like a comfortable place, hopefully. And then you get out and get popcorn. And like, it was just a really special experience. So you don't have to deal with other people's human noises. That's like a big thing for me. Someone like constantly clearing their throat in a movie theater.
Or like picking up their phone, bright old light and everything coming on.
The worst.
So does that mean are you running that statement then? That
I'm hardcore running.
Theaters are better?
I'm like going for the ace.
Same. Hard same. I love drive-ins. There's a big piece of land near our house that I wish some enterprising entrepreneur would come put a drive-in theater in, especially now. I feel like drive-ins could make a comeback.
Yeah.
I know proper movie theaters are reopening. Good luck if you're going to go sit in a movie theater. Not for me. Do your thing. But I would love it if drive-ins made a resurgence. I have always loved the drive-in. My parents used to take me there when we were a kid. We used to have one in my hometown, and now it's a Walmart. And then we had one where I went to college. We had one in San Luis Obispo. And so Yeah, absolutely love.
Oh, and you can bring unlimited snacks and not have to bring like the biggest purse you own and try to stuff all of your snacks and things into your pockets.
That's
your
true.
Purse.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
true. It's much better. All right. Well, now I'm going to look into that. I think the drive-in's like an hour from us. That'd be something fun to do.
Yeah. I think I found out we have one in San Diego. I didn't know that now. Nice. So I'm going to have to go down there at some point whenever they start releasing some films again.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
All right, did you have any more for running or layup?
Yeah, this probably is not a great one, but I just ate. So
don't wait, to really sell it to the people.
Well, so Sean, my husband, just celebrated his 50th birthday this past weekend, and I got him a Haagen-Dazs ice cream cake. And it was the decorating had a lot left to be desired. It was that whole thing of like, nailed it. Like you look at the picture and you're like, oh my God, this is beautiful. And then you get the real thing and it's got like, it looks like a 5-year-old did it. But anyway, it was delicious. And then it got me thinking, Haagen-Dazs and Ben and Jerry are like the two highest quality ice creams on the face of the earth. But I would always put Ben and Jerry's above any other ice cream. So that's the statement, that Ben and Jerry's ice cream is the best in the world.
The best in the world?
Yeah. And I'm not including like gelato. Because there's some absolutely delicious gelato out there.
Okay. As much as I love Ben & Jerry's, especially recently, I've purchased more Ben & Jerry's because I appreciate some of their social stances and what they put their mouth and their money toward. I really appreciate that. I actually polished off some Netflix and chilled last night.
Wait, that's got the popcorn in it?
No, it has, it's peanut butter base with like brownie, and I don't think there was popcorn.
Oh, okay.
No, there was no popcorn, but it was good. Anyway, however, I cannot give them the title of best ice cream in the world because there is a place here, and actually I found out recently this place is nationwide. It's called
Jenny's?
Handle.
Oh.
No, it's called Handles.
Never heard of it.
H-A-N-D-E-L apostrophe S, Handles. And it's homemade ice cream, and it's amazing. They have a s'mores ice cream that tastes exactly like s'mores, graham cracker and all. And like the marshmallow is somehow melted, even though it's in ice cream. We have one in Carlsbad and Encinitas. And apparently they're nationwide. It's like there's some in Ohio and stuff. So Handles is the best ice cream in the world. I will lay up your Ben and Jerry's statement.
Wait, slight sidetrack about your s'mores. We stayed at a cabin this past weekend in the mountains, and of course we had to make s'mores. And have you ever tried, instead of using the Hershey
peanut butter
chocolate,
cup? Yes.
Yes. Just like, why? Like you'll never go back to anything else.
Yeah, it's next level. It's next level.
Yeah.
It's not even funny.
Man, I'm hungry.
I'm about to go eat dinner. You should go eat a s'more. So
I'm going to.
That was a good one though, Sarah. So are you running it? Are you running that Ben & Jerry's is the best?
Yeah, because I haven't had Handles.
You gotta go find
Jenny's
some
ice cream does come in close second though, and then probably Haagen-Dazs.
I don't know Jenny's.
Yeah, it's J-E-N-I. I used to think it was just a local Nashville chain, but apparently it's in a lot of places, at least in the South too.
Well, right. That was the thing that surprised me about Handles. Like I thought it was, only here in California somewhere, but nope, there's a lot of them everywhere. I'm going to look up the locations right now and see if there's one near you, Sarah. That way you can. Oh, nope. They are only in Alabama, Arizona, California, Indiana, Nevada, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Utah.
Oh, my God.
Alabama,
gosh.
The closest to you?
Alabama's about an hour and a half.
All right. Huntsville. Yeah. How close is Huntsville?
Huntsville's about an hour and a half. I'll be in Pennsylvania next week.
But
I'll be hitting up Rita's Water.
There's quite a few in Pennsylvania.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
You should go check it out. Anyway, Handles. Go get it, people. All right, anyway, that's our show for the week. Thank you. This was Ice Cream Talk. One more thing. Shout out to my two neighbors who helped me bring a pinball machine upstairs. Word of advice, people. Don't ever try and bring a pinball machine upstairs unless you have neighbors who are much stronger than you. That's my shout out for the week. Sarah, do you have any shout outs?
I actually don't.
Okay.
For the first time ever. I think
crazy things.
Shout out to everyone playing at the Dynamic Disc Open this weekend.
Yeah. Shout out to the Disc Golf Pro Tour for taking the mantle for the rest of the season for the pros. We appreciate it at the PDGA. I know the pro players appreciate it. I know the fans appreciate it. And Sarah has one shout out.
I do have a shout out. My disc golf wife, Ellen Widboom. She is in, we're so close. Her brother actually lives, in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. And she listens to the show. She actually texted me and was like, you guys are helping me drive to Nashville.
Need to get Ellen on the show then.
Let's get her on. And we were going to try to meet up, but things are just a little bit too tight. So I won't get to see her. But shout out to Ellen. Love you, girl. Hope to play with you soon.
Yeah, Ellen's good people. She brought me beer from like Belgium one time.
That's
she's amazing. Awesome. Yeah, she's good people for sure. So, all right. Thank you for listening, everybody. And shout out to you listeners. If you could do us a solid, go leave us a review, a nice one. We like nice reviews, maybe 4 or 5 stars, you know, something like that on your favorite podcasting app. That'd be cool. Share the show with your friends. And we're getting now back into the time where we're going to talk about actual disc golf more. Yes. So thanks for sticking with us. Listen to the elections episodes coming up this weekend and enjoy the dynamic disc open. So for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll catch up with you next week.